It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Indeed, off and running, we are on this, the 29th day of September 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's also where we tuck away one of the best-kept secrets in broadcast augmentation.
Yep.
The Horn chat room. If you should happen to pick a screen name and a password by going to HeadOn.live, if you haven't done that before, and you jump into the chat room, you'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, assisted capably by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy Steve from Georgistan. Yes, it's everybody's there. Well, not everybody, but folks are there, and they're just waiting for you. There in the merry, wacky, madcap, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the 3 hours. This program is live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And I guess we got, what, another month of daylight time left? And then we change ends of the blanket and pretend that, yeah, whatever. But the days of darkness are upon us. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Bob. It is Trump-tanic Tuesday, the day when we celebrate, or at least take notice of, manifestations of Trump-tanic intellect here on the program. You may recall that the origins of Trump-tanic Tuesday go back to Titanic Tuesday, when long, long ago now, and pre-Trump, before there was ever any such thing as a maggot. No, this was just a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, etc., teabagger type. No, this is even before the Tea Party. This was just a conservative Republican who called the local right-wing morning radio program and Beckley, West Virginia, and said, "Steve, how come it is that there's seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach." And Steve, that paragon of right-wing broadcasting, who has indeed since gone on to his long home, answered, in addition to explaining that the New River flows south when it flows north, explained, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." No word yet on the whereabouts of the Titanic big green egg smoker from the Lido deck of the said vessel. No. But that's how it all got started. And so every Tuesday, I look for a story or stories that live up to the low standards of right-wing intellect for us to take note of on what was once upon a time Titanic Tuesday and is in fact now Trump-tanic Tuesday. It's almost as if somehow or another I was managing to anticipate stupidities yet to come. Those long, long years ago, 16 or more. Mm-hmm. Every program here at the Horn, though, begins with gratitude. This program is no different. Thanks go out to Joseph for his subscription. Thank you very kindly for being part of the merry little band that helps keep this program on the air. We're enjoying a full week, actually more than, of fundraising free radio. Rounding out the month of September, which we got today and then tomorrow and then we're done. What's that? Stephen, New York says standards. There are standards. Minimal ones at the very least. Right. And, of course, we're all just sitting here waiting with bated breath for 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. When the first of the 2020 presidential debates will begin. It's almost as though someone somewhere along the way heard some of my complaints back during pageant season when I was noting that if this was a real debate, it would not be interrupted by commercials. Well, guess what? Over there on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, there will be no commercial interruptions when the debate begins at 9 p.m. Since it is on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, however, and since Chris Wallace is the host, it will have some aspects, I have no doubt, of pageant-based broadcasting. Yeah. And the silliness, the stupidity, has already begun. Just to give you an idea, you know that I get right-wing, a shit ton of right-wing emails every day. So, Americans for Limited Government. Americans for Limited Government, Limited Government. You know, they want a small, they're small government Republicans. They want a government that's small enough to drown in a thimble, not a bathtub. Them tax and spend Democrats spending all that money on bathtubs when we need a government small enough to drown in a thimble. God dang it, they's going to ruin us. Presidential debate preview. How low is the bar for Biden? Have pundits and politicos set the bar so low for Joe Biden's debate performance that if he simply shows up and know who and where he is, no, they said, and no, his performance will be hailed a success. Check out this here Americans for Limited Government purview of what promises to be a colorful debate. And what they mean by colorful debate is that it will be a struggle for Donald Trump not to just tear his clothes off, start playing with himself, and yelling that word that has all the same letters as ginger in it every 15 seconds. As Randy in PA says, it's going to be a circus. Are you going to take one for the team, Bob? I will be taking one for the team, but I'll be taking one for the team whilst on the road because I, in my other life, I'm also Bob Kincaid, amateur Uber driver. And so Ferg is on the 2 to 10 yesterday and today. So I'll be heading for Berkeley. There, Beckley, sorry. If only. I'll be heading for Beckley long about the time that the debate is on the air. Mm-hmm. But I'll be a-listening. Maybe it'll be easier without the visuals. It won't be quite so nauseating from having to view the repulsive orange visage of Corona Caligula. Yeah. So I will be. Damn, nicotine patches. Who knew nicotine could induce the hiccups? Well, it can. I'll be taking one for the team. Atrios, our buddy Jug of Punch says, damn, get a drink of water, Bob. Oh, shut up. Go and get a drink of water. Jug of Punch says, Atrios read your mind. Debate night, when it's obvious that if we want to treat politics as theater, then we should hire some theater critics to be political pundits and not the other way around. And remembering those lyrics that were brought to us by Scott in San Diego, you might as well have the hockey puck ready for this thing, too. And here, let's all just sing a rousing chorus. Ready? One, two, three. Damn these hiccups. Hunter Biden, Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time. We will hear about Hunter Biden till we're all about to lose our minds. Yeah, there'll be a Hunter Biden fest. I hope Joe is ready with a couple of zingers. Yeah, let's talk about Don Jr. Right. As for why there will be no ads, well, Suman has a theory. I think Fox News TV Radio Rwanda will not air ads so that the faithful can worship the second coming of their Lord on TV without interruption. I can't think of any other reason. Well, I can. I mean, maybe it's just a brief acknowledgement that some portion of our political process should not be tied to the profit motive. Oh, well, okay. Silly me. Steve in New York says, I have no plans to watch. Should I? If so, why? I think it'll tell us, Steve, a lot about what the next 30 days are going to be. Well, the next 33 days, 34 days. And change. Why no ads, Steve ads? Nobody wanted to buy any. No. They could have run. I think probably the reason there were no ads is because it would have been one. It might have been perceived as just too over the top pro Trump, because I'm sure that old meth freak that runs the, he's a meth freak, isn't he? He's some sort of former addict. That runs the My Pillow outfit would have bought every available minute. Just a guess. Bill in Allentown says the debates will be non-commercial because they'll be on C-SPAN for the debates. That's why. No, this is it C-SPAN? It's Fox. Last I knew, it was Fox News. Yeah, as Timo says in the chat room, not quite the same as the League of Women Voters that used to moderate the debates. And speaking of moderation, we've got a moderation story. Not the kind of, you know, like, oh, you know, I'll only have three fingers of whiskey at a time during the debate. No, not that kind of moderation. But I've got a story in a little bit. Randy in PA says, don't let the radio drive you off the road, Bob. Oh, I won't. I won't. I'll have a... both hands on the wheel. And well, what does we've been quoting Jim Morrison during this political season, especially in regard to Donald Trump during the Don-demic. You know, killer on the road, his brain is burning like a toad. That toad, of course, would be Bill Pepe the Frog Barr. But there's another Jim Morrison lyric that Randy just reminded me of. Don't let the radio drive you off the road, Bob. Keep your eyes on the road and your hands upon the wheel. And I will. I can assure you, I will. Megan says, I'm watching, but I'm unsure if I need popcorn or hard liquor for this. Will horse tranquilizers work? Asking for a friend. Well, what you want to do, Megan, is you want to watch in the company of others, pandemic notwithstanding. You want to maintain your social distance, but you want to want to have one, and you want your friend to have one. You've each got a blowgun, and you've each got an array of Thorazine darts. And every time that Nitwit Nero starts losing his shit, and you get ready to start out the door to eat dirt and run rabbits, if you do, then your friend at social distance takes the blowgun dart and goes, and right in the neck, and you calm down. As my buddy Lewis put it earlier in the day, he said, I'm trying to come up with a drinking game for tonight's festivities, but I haven't come up with one yet that doesn't have me hammered in the first 5 minutes. It's one of the great questions of our time. And I don't know if anybody's sorted it out. You know, Trump bingo. I mean, is there a debate bingo card? I haven't had a chance to check around for that. Okay. Well, I was wrong. So it's just being hosted or moderated by Chris Wallace, who, of course, is asking a list of questions that are largely favorable to Nitwit Nero. But it'll be on all the channels and no ads. ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, C-SPAN. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. That's a big help. Our buddy Jake says, here's another nominee for excellence in Truptanic anti-intellect. Surprise, he's a member of the Ohio legislature. a maggot in Ohio is leading an impeachment effort against maggot Governor Mike DeWine. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Dave, number 11. A half teaspoon of powdered sugar dissolved completely in the mouth and then swallowed at once stops hiccups. Always. Makes for great radio, too. Yeah. I don't know if I want to jack my blood sugar up that way. My favorite hiccup remedy from eons ago, and it always works as well, is one that was given to me by a bartender friend of mine. Oh, Jesus. 33 years ago. And that is a wedge of lemon liberally doused with Angostura bitters. Knocks them right out of the park. And I ain't got neither right now. So, you know. Oh, there's our debate bingo card. Thank you. Ralph serving as the ad hoc research department for the Horn this evening. The debate bingo card from the New York Post. China virus, tax returns, Hunter, fake news, vaccine, rigged, malarkey, pre-existing conditions, law and order. And I still say that every time Nitwit Nero says law and order, Joe needs to lean into the microphone and say, dum-dum, dum-dum, law and order, dum-dum. Russia, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Ukraine, build back better. The wall,
huge.
Scranton, make, keep America great. Obamacare, we'll see.
We'll see what happens. Crooked Hillary.
Antifa.
Antifa.
Putin and
hoax.
I really think it should be, I mean, there's some Joe Biden stuff in there. I really think a proper debate bingo card should be all Trump, because he's going to be the one who says the stupid things in abundance. Yeah. Oh, and there it is, a link via CNN.com. See how voters in Georgia react to Trump tax news. And, of course, the screen cap that goes with the video shows some old codger in a Trump T-shirt that features Mount Rushmore with Donald Trump on it. You just know what that's going to be all about. Well, it just shows he's as brilliant a man as he has ever told us he was, because who don't take advantage of all the loopholes that he can find in order to pay less taxes? It is as American as apple pie. And like Steve in New York, I am sick the fuck of these, he says. Yeah. Oh, apparently there are multiple bingo cards. Yeah, okay. The New York Post has come up with a series of four.
Sleepy Joe.
Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting night. The vast majority, I won't be one of them, but I'm certainly not critical if you are. It could be that a vast majority of the Horn Family Community Congregation is going to be falling down drunk by 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Flavio in Wisconsin noting, we're so fucked in Wisconsin. Oh, look, it's the good folks over at WILL, the same people who want to purge all the wrong color people from the voting rolls. Give them an A-plus for consistency. They want to purge and kill. I wonder what Justice Becky Bradley will compare the mask mandate to. The Muslim veil? Just a hunch. Headline, conservative legal group asks court to immediately halt enforcement of statewide mask mandate. Well, it's no real surprise on this Trump-tanic Tuesday, because I've got a story here. A candidate for U.S. Senate in Maine. Well, they had a debate, a Senate debate last night, and independent candidate Max Lynn, if that really is his name, well, he came with a sight gag.
And so, again, symbolically, I want to cut these masks right in front of our viewers. I want to be the first Senate candidate and your first senator in the United States to say, I protest government telling us what we have to wear and telling us what our businesses are necessary and what are unnecessary. This is a...
He really came to the debate with a pair of scissors and a handful of disposable masks so that he could cut them up to show the people of Maine how committed he is to freedom! Wolverines! Yeah, right. Oh, the stupid. It burns as us. And then, another thing for this day. Jennifer, with a note. If asshole face, cat's ass face, wins this delicate election, then nationwide, everyone must, in preparation for Thursday, April 15th, 2021, cross out every page on tax returns and scribble in black Sharpie the following, $750 only. If this occurs nationwide, how can they arrest, detain, or even penalize everyone? And this, Bob! Well, tonight's the big debate. Despite the pundits referring to tonight's debate as a potential Donnybrook, In the end, I really believe this will be a Titanic Tuesday struggle, but Joe Biden will perform well and Trump will probably just come off as the ass he truly is. What's that, Giraffery? Giraffery, with a very philosophical moment of reflection.
I, Giraffery the Giraffe, truly believe that after Biden is finished with Trump, the so-called Donnybrook will look more like a Donnycrook, as Biden will expose Trump for the criminal that he truly is. Thank you, Giraffery, for the William F. Buckley analysis.
Bob, I cannot believe, Joey says, that last night nobody in the Horn community picked up on the real reason Amy Coney Barrett was wearing brown on Saturday afternoon. Clearly, as a circuit judge with her strident Nazi opinions, which have hurt women and the elderly, she was sending a signal that she is a brown shirt shill through and through. The incomparable Tara Devlin described Coney Barrett as Lydia from The Handmaid's Tale, considering Coney Barrett's strong religious dogma and resolution that she must be subservient to her husband at all times. Oh no, there goes Giraffery again. Giraffery poses the question,
if she is subservient to her husband, then why does she have a hyphenated name?
A very good point, Giraffery. Does not the Bible imply that the two become one and the woman will assume the man's surname? Joey says, during my college years, I had two jobs that were brutal and both involved food, which was made by hand. I worked at an ice cream shop where I made handmade cones. Oh, that ice cream was hard. And then I graduated to a slaughterhouse where a team of workers gathered together the excess residual pork from the pigs, which often involved their tails, and then the residue would be cured and turned into a hot dog. And thus recalling the words of Bismarck, there are two things in life you do not want to see made, law and sausages.
Und Würsten.
And there went dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. That's on you, Joey. Much of the process was done by hand, so you could say we had our own handmaid's tail, T-A-I-L. Ah. That's a very weak cowbell. But wait, there's more. We would then pour some of the company chili on that hot dog and end up with a handmade coney. Those handmade cones were always a good, especially after devouring a handmade coney. That was some really good food. Here's hoping that at least five Republican senators won't give this nominee any serious thought because this coney is just not very good. Food for thought. Oh, what now, Giraffery? Giraffery posing a profound question.
Ms. Coney, if you purport to be a true and strict originalist of the Constitution, then you must concede that women, as well as giraffes, are not permitted the constitutional right to vote. Then so henceforth, considering those initial whims of the founders to which you subscribe, then what permits any woman in this Senate establishment the right to cast a vote for you at this time in history?
This has been Joey's Journal for Titanic Tuesday, the 29th day of September, with Giraffery really rocking the vote. Well, that's how it goes with making hot dogs. And it's always been said that a hot dog has everything but the squeal, everything but the oink. Darlene in Connecticut says, rock on, Jennifer. Cat's ass face. That was me. Jennifer said asshole face. I said cat's ass face. A more diplomatic way of stating cat anus mouth in reference to Trump. LMAO. Jennifer's more classy than I. Yes. Well, no, I mean, I'm not saying Jennifer's more classy than you. No, I would not do that. No. So, but it's good to hear from Jennifer. Randy in PA says, Trump will stalk Biden while jumping around the stage just like he did Hillary. What do you bet? Oh, I'd say that's a pretty good. I don't know. Does he have to stay in one place? Do they have to stay behind the podiums? Podia? Not sure. Oh, rest assured, Hunter Biden is on the bingo card, Megan. That's not the free space.
Oh, this is going to be it's going to be a hot mess, I have no doubt. Stephen, New York, Rorschach country. We've been a Rorschach country for a long time. Things in politics appear to each of us as we want to see them and merely reinforce what we already thought. Yeah, otherwise known as confirmation bias. Indeed. Yeah, I know. It was long. It was a long read, Flavio. The extension of the Wisconsin mask mandate comes as Wisconsin averaged more than 2,100 new COVID-19 cases per day over the last week. Flavio says you glossed over the lawsuit to halt the enforcement of the mask mandate in Wisconsin. Well, reading all the whys and wherefores and the theretofores was just a pleading too far. On the other hand, in New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio has said that people will be fined who refuse to wear masks in certain New York City neighborhoods, because certain neighborhoods in New York City are causing New York's heretofore manageable less than 1% growth rate to rocket up to 3.25%. Those neighborhoods, Gravesend, Homecrest, Midwood, Kew Gardens, Edgemere, Far Rockaway, Borough Park, Bensonhurst, Mapleton, Garretson Beach, Homecrest, Sheepshead Bay, and Flatlands Midwood have all been driving the coronavirus numbers up in New York City, like I said, to 3.25%. And so officials have been dispatched to those neighborhoods in both Brooklyn and Queens. And city workers will hand out masks to any residents of those neighborhoods who aren't wearing them. And if someone is an asshole enough to say, well, I ain't going to put that on. Wrong. I know. Wrong accent. Yeah. Still, it's the attitude that counts. I ain't going to put that on because I got freedom. Well, then they get fined. And more importantly, private schools. The mayor has declared that if they don't follow rules like mask use and social distancing, they'll just flat out be closed. Yeah. New York had done that in the spring, fining people for not wearing masks. But then the NYPD, of course, had to fuck everything up by primarily fining only people of color. So I said I've got another moderation story. I didn't know this, but wow. Turns out, maybe Mitch McConnell's a member of that handmade group too. Because Chinless Mitch, for decades now, has refused to participate in any campaign debates that involve a woman as a moderator. The Lexington Herald Leader reported that it was almost 25 years ago the last time a woman moderated a debate that Moscow Mitch was involved in. Kentucky Democratic Party spokesperson Marissa McNee said, "It's no surprise that the same person who's blocking renewal of the Violence Against Women Act, equal pay for women in the workplace, and so much other legislation that would help Kentucky women is refusing to appear in a debate moderated by a woman.
Mitch McConnell's been in the Senate for 35 years. It's time for him to step into the modern world where women are equal and stop forcing last-minute changes to avoid accountability. Because, well, they were set to maybe have a woman as a moderator in an upcoming debate. Yeah. He's refused, McConnell has, to appear in a debate alongside the libertarian, Brad Barron, even though Barron qualified for the debate. And so the debate organizers, KET, the Statewide Public Affairs Channel, Kentucky Educational Television, I would warrant, they were set to have Renee Shaw moderate the debate. Now, she's been doing broadcast journalism in Kentucky for some 23 years. She's also the founder of the first statewide minority affairs program called Connections with Renee Shaw, on Kentucky Educational Television. She's gone to the Southeast Asia to teach reporting principles and standards. She's produced any number of programs for national news. She moderates public issues forums and talks about diversity in media and political and state legislative matters in Kentucky. But, no. And in addition, apparently McConnell's campaign put the kibosh on a co-moderator of the debate, WAVE3's Shannon Cogan. She's been axed as well, so that the only person asking a question will be, that's right, a guy. Well, how very people of praise of Moscow, Mitch. Yeah. Reporting on the mask issue in New York, fines in New York City. Steve says there are signs on the subway saying that there is a $50 fine possible for not wearing a mask. The thing is, I've seen a number of TIBs, terrorists in blue, also known as the NYPD, who don't wear them. Why am I not surprised? Yeah, Flavio noting, well, in New York City, people of color not wearing masks, they won't be fined. They'll be shot. And our buddy Jug of Punch sends along a quote from Thomas Wolfe. Only the dead know Brooklyn. Wow. But it is Titanic Tuesday, and great googly moogly, we got one. We talked about this clown on the program earlier, last week and even before that. Just by way of recalling, the Reverend Raphael Warnock has a halfway decent chance of making his way into the runoff that will follow the Georgia Senate contest that involves Kelly stock dump COVID crisis stock dumping Loeffler and Doug mouthful of collards Collins, because those two have run way, 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 way over to the right, leaving room for Reverend Warnock to maybe capture the normal people vote. Except for one problem. The subject of this Titanic Tuesday nomination. That one problem's name is Matt Lieberman. Asshole. And the reason Matt Lieberman is an asshole is because the apple falleth not far from the tree, nor the turd far from the asshole. Matt Lieberman is, of course, Joe Lieberman's son. Joe Quisling Lieberman. No less than Barack Obama have reached out to Matt Lieberman saying, please get out of the race. Give us a chance. Stacey Abrams has asked Matt Lieberman very nicely to get out of the race and give Reverend Warnock a chance. In return for her graciousness, Matt Lieberman referred to her as engaging in candidate suppression. No, really. Arnold pointing out, Joe Lieberman, you mean Trader Joe? Yeah, Trader Joe is another, yes. So Matt Lieberman won't get out of the race no matter who asks him to. Dozens of Democratic politicians have pleaded with him to quit trying to fuck America. But Matt Lieberman is a Lieberman, and fucking America is what Liebermans do best. But along the way, and this story comes from Slate, by the way, by Aviva Shen, the headline for it is, "The jerk who gave me a C-plus in English could cost Democrats the Senate." Dear God, he's a middle school English teacher. In the photo that accompanies the article, standing there smiling like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. Aviva Shen says, I'm not the kind of person who dwells on bad grades. I got C's in math all the time. I cut class and lied to teachers and frequently considered homework optional. But English was my thing. As it happens, I'm now a professional writer and editor. This is in no way thanks to him, Matt Lieberman. He was the kind of English teacher who nitpicked about rules and sucked the joy out of reading and interpreting literature. He'd dock you for every spelling or grammar error made in a paper, so if you could make a solid argument that the pig in Lord of the Flies was a metaphor for lost civilization, but spelled civilization wrong throughout the paper, you'd get a D. He almost ruined books for me. Now apparently he's moved on to trying to ruin democracy. And you know, Matt Lieberman notwithstanding, or aside, it really is profound the effect that a bad teacher can have on a student's future. Ferg went through a school system here that really just didn't give much of a damn. And we only found out in the last year or so why he had the troubles in school that he had, you know, apart from the fact of being bullied and stomped on and beaten and tormented every day. But no, he has learning disabilities that went unremarked and undiagnosed. Ah, who cares, right? Well, it turns out that Matt Lieberman is one of those kinds of teachers. But nonetheless, Matt Lieberman is also a writer. Oh, dear God. Matt Lieberman wrote and self-published a novel called Lucius. And this novel by Matt Lieberman, the guy who may very well fuck America by not getting out of the race, it's a piece of fiction. It's a novel. And it is a product of Matt Lieberman imagining what it would be like for a protagonist to, who is, of course, a thinly veiled Matt Lieberman, to be acquainted with an older, mentally ill white man who imagines that he has a black slave named Lucius, and to prove how woke he is, Matt Lieberman Well, Matt Lieberman, in his novel, regularly and routinely and almost, you would say, liberally sprinkles the entire book with that word that has all the same letters as ginger but isn't ginger. The Georgia NAACP read it, and having read it, set it down and said, oh, no, he's got to get out of the race. But he still hasn't. Because, you see, being a Lieberman, he actually wants the Republicans to retain control. The character who is the protagonist, who is actually the vehicle for Matt Lieberman's thoughts, is named Tree Weissman. And Tree Weissman, in the book, ponders an interracial couple on an airplane. A couple that he clearly is able to identify as a pudgy white Jewish guy and a brown-skinned girl whom he describes as pretty in a mild way. No, pretty in a mild way. He then goes on, according to Aviva Shin, to speculate that maybe the pretty in a mild way brown-skinned girl is with the pudgy Jewish, short, pudgy Jewish guy because he has money. No, really. Can't you just imagine Joe, his mama, his daddy Joe and his mama Hadassah back at home reading Lucius, just bursting with pride at their son's racism? There's usage of the phrase bygone day and dear reader. And then we get and then we are introduced to Benno Johnson, who's 90 years old and lives in a nursing home. Matt Lieberman apparently bogarting Tuesdays with Maury in a little bit in a certain way. Tree Weissman knows Benno Johnson because he's a volunteer at the nursing home. Sure. And so Benno then tells Tree Weissman, Matt Lieberman, stories about his imaginary lifelong slave named Lucius. And writes Lucius's conversations in heavy black slang dialogue. For instance, as Aviva Shin points out, having Lucius look at the sky and say, "How is you up there, Mr. Moon?" Yeah. And Benno Johnson gets treated as a decent guy, just, you know, misguidedly racist. And Matt Lieberman feels like he's just the guy to ponder the vagaries of, quote, what it means to be black, white, free, slave, and innocent, guilty, or complicit in today's America. Yeah. This, as Aviva Shin points out, is another in a long line of magical Negro stories. James Woodall over at the NAACP explained it as a black character who shows up to illuminate something about a white character or help them along their journey.
Speaking to Huffington Post, Mr. Woodall said, if this is his imagination, if this is how he constructs a world where he's a white savior and he needs a magical Negro to help save him, I would urge him to reconsider his place in this world. He has Ben O. Johnson refer to my boy, Lucius. And this is the guy. This is the guy who is going to make sure that the Senate seat in Georgia remains firmly in Republican hands. When we actually have a fighting chance of taking the seat, if only Matt Lieberman would get out of the way. But Matt Lieberman is much more comfortable with imaginary black folks than the real black man who could possibly take that Senate seat. Yeah. Flavio saying, yeah, do I get a cowbell? Okay, you can have a cowbell, Flavio. I posted that to the Horn Facebook page, Flavio says, and on my timeline when I saw it. What a cringeworthy non-novel. But what great writing by Aviva Shen. Oh, that isn't so much a critique of Matt Lieberman's novel as a crushing brief against it. Jesus. What's wrong? Well, we could be all night on that, couldn't we? I was going to say, what's wrong with Matt Lieberman? But then again, consider the source, and you get a pretty good idea. We're almost done with 2020. This book, Lucius, it's not something that Matt Lieberman wrote back in his misspent youth, or that he wrote, say, for a senior thesis for his English degree, his creative writing degree. I don't even know that that's what his degree is in. No, he claims that he wrote this in 2000 after the Charlottesville violence of 2017. It really, after the Nazis marched in Charlottesville chanting, Jews will not replace us, Matt Lieberman wrote that piece of trash. Whoa. That takes some, what's the word in Yiddish? That takes some chutzpah. And rather a lot of it. If only there was some way to get him to bow out. But that would be a matter of getting Matt Lieberman to discover some degree of simple human decency. Or maybe even patriotism. And that's just not bloody likely to happen. Hey, back to the debate. A question that can't wait until prayer meeting tomorrow, Bob. To those of you who are going to watch tonight's debate or listen to it on the radio, I would like to pose a question. Since Mitch McConnell, also known commonly as Moscow Mitch, if he's a member of the People of Praise, Mother Russia, would that make him a Russian Orthodox cult member? I guess the first tenet of the Republican religion is thou shalt have no other god before money. Sorry, Donnie. You've been interesting. Signed, your buddy, Dave, from the blind. Jeremy says, 2020, the real question is, we're almost done with 2020, but is it almost done with us? You get the idea that it probably wants to wring a little bit more out of us and probably will. You know, we've crossed the million dead mark planet-wide with COVID-19, making it by far and away the most deadly infectious disease. Right. And three countries run by right-wing dictator wannabes, the United States, Brazil, and India, make up almost half of the deaths worldwide, the ones that we're counting. Because a number of well-regarded scientists suspect that the death toll from COVID-19 is probably substantially higher than the million of which we are aware. A million dead. COVID-19 has killed as many people worldwide as George W. Bush killed in roughly the same amount of time in Iraq between 2003 and 2004. Whew. Imagine all the tears. Imagine all the grief. Imagine all the empty seats at all the tables. Imagine the wives sleeping alone, the husbands sleeping alone. Imagine all the conversations with little children about where mommy went or where daddy went and why they're never coming back. Grievous indeed. Is the work of monsters. A million dead. Well, the death toll here in the United States now over 203,000. I suppose you're aware of the stupidity that the right-wing idiocracy machine has been bloviating for the last 24 hours or so. Nitwit Nero is nothing if not a case study in projection. Among other things, they're still demanding a drug test. A drug test from Joe Biden. Sorry, I got Lieberman on the brain. They added to it. The maggots want proof. I kid you not. That Joe Biden isn't on Adderall. As David in South Carolina, Stan, pointed out, it's all projection with him. Noel Kassler, the guy who told the world about Nitwit Nero's behavior on The Apprentice and the fact that he's an Adderall freak, noted via Twitter, Rudy just said Trump claims Biden's taking Adderall. Trump literally had chunks of it flying out of his nose, but the mainstream media has given him a pass, and now they've flipped the script, which is Trump's M.O., I bet he accuses Biden of snorting it tonight. Because according to Andrew Feinberg, Rudy Giuliani simultaneously claiming that Joe Biden has
8 out of 10 dementia symptoms, but is at the same time relying on Adderall to remember things. Hint, Adderall does not improve memory. Adderall is just the timed-release version of, what's that speed for attention deficit disorder? It's the time-release version, and when you chop it up, you get a really refreshing burst of flavor. But as is always the case, as David in South Carolina Stan points out, whatever he's complaining about from somebody else is what he himself is already doing. Jesus. So we're all set up for a merry chase this evening. Flavio asking, can Matt Lieberman really be that much of a spoiler? I mean, who would want to vote for that sack of shit? Seriously, he could cost us the Senate. Urgh. Well, the only way he costs us the Senate, Flavio, is if Martha McSally makes a miraculous comeback, Steve Daines wins, Cory Gardner prevails, Joni Ernst wins, Susan Collins wins. But nonetheless, it would be of tectonic proportions if we could actually take a Senate seat in Georgia and hold on to one in Alabama. That would send a shockwave through the country. It would mark a significant fracture in the solid South. And it's a fracture that must sooner or later emerge. The only way the South has remained solid thus far is by virtue of multifaceted attempts to keep a third of the Southern population, or a big chunk of it, out of the voting booth. Remember last night's story about the Trump campaign working to depress African-American voter turnout. Ritalin. Thank you, Flavio. Ritalin. Adderall is time-released Ritalin. Flavio says they wanted me on it in high school, and my parents said no. Thank God for my parents. Yes, indeed. Speed. It's a form of legal crank. Yeah. Clarence, with a note, says, birds of a feather. Sounds like Matt Lieberman might be a distant cousin of Stephen Miller, the other self-hating Jew. I'm sure they could get together and have a fine time. My vote, Jeremy in Vermont says, is for 32-year-old Heather Heyer, who was killed in Charlottesville, Virginia, July 2017 by Nazi scum, whom our president called very fine people. My vote will be for the 208,335 people who died of COVID-19, many of whom didn't have to, but did due to a lack of action taken by the administration. My vote, November 3rd, is for the 20 million Americans who have had their health care threatened by this administration in the middle of the worst pandemic in a century. My vote is for the trans members of the military who were drummed out for no other reason than who they are. My vote is for Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman for telling the truth and losing his career for it. My vote is for the people of Puerto Rico who still haven't been helped until the president saw it as a way to gain votes after they lost all in Hurricane Maria 3 years ago. My vote is for anyone who's ever served in the military and the ones that didn't make it back. They're not losers and suckers. They didn't get 5 deferments for bone spurs. Most importantly, my vote is for my nieces and nephews so they can live in a more tolerant world where skin color, sex, or creed, or who or how you love isn't what you're judged for. By God, that's a cowbell, Jeremy.
Hmm. My beloved Agnes must have, oh, wait, I know what happened. Time to turn the ringer off on the stress line.
Well said, Jeremy. If you can't take that list and pick some reason there to be excited about voting for Joe Biden, well, there's a good chance there's a moral failing somewhere in there. Okay, we are past the top of the hour and the filibuster, or filibobster. Let's go over. You heard the phone ring. Let's go over and see who's on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
That's Darlene again. Did I mess the program up again?
No, you haven't messed anything up at all. You're great, Darlene.
I guess the ring came through or something over that. I didn't hear it, but it sounds like what you're saying is the ring came over.
Well, Agnes was producing Dr. Bill earlier today, and somehow or another turned the ringer on.
I love Agnes. No blaming to Agnes at all.
Oh no.
So Ruth Bader Ginsburg was actually buried this morning.
I saw that. They finally got her into the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it's well over a week. Seems like a lot of people are having trouble letting her go. She got buried. She was buried at Arlington, which I was surprised. But then doing a little deeper dive into it, her beloved husband, Marty, is buried there. I guess he was in the military, which I did not know. So that's where she is. It's sort of been an undercurrent story, like a kind of a story that's sort of been in the undercurrents all last week, even though Ruth wound up dominating the news, even though she's deceased. Oh, and by the way, when I look at that Amy Coney Barrett's outfit, it looks like kind of a souped up Handmaid's Tale type of outfit.
The
brown color. Yeah, it's like, I'm just like, oh God. It's scary, and basically, who is it? One of our Democratic senators was saying today that it's inevitable. She will be, she will be appointed.
Confirmed.
She'll get confirmed. Sorry,
I think it is too. But what? I think there's at least a certain kind of victory if she's only confirmed after we have confirmed that there will no longer be a Republican Senate in January.
Well, yeah, and I mean, is it Roy Blunt? Is he a Democrat?
No, he's a Republican. He's a Republican else? In Missouri.
Who the heck am I? He was saying that the Democratic senator, one of our Democratic senators, was saying that they can delay. And obfuscate, and I hope they do. I hope Democrats do. Just try to delay as much as possible, because you never, with what's squatting in the White House masquerading as president, you never know. Maybe this is a situation where, even though it's inevitable, maybe time is on our hands, and if we can delay it as much as possible, who knows what might happen. But it looks like when I did send a long screed to my rant to Senator Blumenthal by email about where I stood.
Who, by the way, refuses to meet with her?
Yeah, that's what I was going. Yeah, exactly. He's refusing. He is essentially saying she's illegitimate. She's not a legitimate pick, and that's that's pretty. That's very unusual for him, because he's so gentlemanly and will give people the benefit of the doubt. But I think he's getting the message that people are angry. And so that's what I want to hear more of coming from Democratic senators, is that although she may be confirmed and installed onto the Supreme Court, she's not legitimate. And my hope is, that Biden and Harris will.
I want Kamala Harris to make her cry the way she made Kavanaugh cry. I'm just mean.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, but moreover, you know, when she's in, I'm hoping that they actually engage. I'm hoping that there's some retribution and that they level the playing field and that they're not going to sit there, Biden and Harris, especially Biden, and think, well, you know, we'll forget. We can't forget this. Something has to be done. I want to use the word retribution, but that's where I'm at. And that is, you know, many, months away. So my hope is that Democrats take it seriously going forward, and that if we should take the Senate and the president and the presidency, that the score is settled here, and that because what's happening is installing her on the Supreme Court, you know, that's going to really mess things up for generations. And Mitch McConnell has been allowed by Chuck Schumer and others to get away with packing the judiciary and altering it to such a degree that, you know, like you said, the Supreme Court alone, how many Catholics are on there now? What, six if you count her? Amy Coney Barrett. So there's something totally skewed here. It's very clear that it's being, they can pack it. Why can't we?
Yeah. Run it up to 13 and appoint four and no, you know, no more of this centrist horse shit. I want four fire breathing liberals. I want to run the number of the Supreme Court up to 13, and I want four fire breathing liberals.
Exactly.
Who are about 13 years old. something else I was going to mention, Darlene. I don't know if you saw this over the weekend, but our buddy John in PA saw it and tweeted it along to me, and I was like, "Ooh, yuck." Here's how scummy these maggots are. As if you didn't know. No sooner was Amy Coney Barrett nominated than they began to fundraise, and part of their fundraising was a hustle selling, I think it was T-shirts.
Notorious
ACB.
That infuriated me.
Gagged my gut.
That just infuriated me. I saw that too. I said, how dare they? She is unworthy of any comparison like that. They're also, what asshole there, Republican, was trying to have the Ruth Bader Ginsburg rule that there should only be 9 justices. They're trying to do they're trying to prevent the potential, you know, packing of the court by the Democrats with adding, like, you know, 11 to 13.
Well, have you seen these ads that they're running now? And have you seen the ads that are running in favor of her? You know, Judge Handmaid. They're running ads that show Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Barack Obama saying the president is the president for 4 years and he does the things that the president does for 4 years. Those were statements that were made back when Mitch McConnell declared that Barack Obama was only 3/5 of a president by refusing to hold hearings on Merrick Garland. And so they're using statements made about the stealing of the seat from Merrick Garland to argue that Donald Trump should be allowed to go ahead and nominate Amy Coney Barrett. No shit.
Right. So it sounds like that is truly, truly, honestly, something that is quote unquote taken out of context.
It couldn't be any further out of context. Which is exactly
what Republicans do, right? They project everything onto everybody else. So, you know, when they're sitting there saying, you know, there's a deep state, there's, you know, to me, that's like red flags. Like, okay, this is, we all know that's bullshit, but it's like, what are you doing? What are these Republicans doing? They're generating, creating all this shit that they're accusing Democrats of doing. It was Dick Durbin, by the way. He was the one today that said we can't.
Yeah,
stop
Flavio.
They can
Flavio.
It, but not stop.
Yeah, Flavio sent me an email saying.
Thanks,
the same
Flavio.
Thing.
Yeah, yep. Flavio's on top of it. Yeah, thanks, Flavio. So, I hope they delay and they do everything they can to slow this thing down. One of the undercurrent stories is that today Andrew Weissman released his book, Where the Law Ends, Inside a Mueller Investigation. And then I guess Robert Mueller shot back today, which is interesting. The second time that he's, and I have not been able to read, I've read excerpts of the text of his letter to the editor or op-ed. Again, it's interesting that he posted it. You know, he seems to like the Washington Post. But I don't know if it's something you need to have a subscription for to actually read. But the gist of it is that Robert Mueller pushed back against Weissman without necessarily naming, you know, saying his name, that he was disappointed that he understands people have opinions. He was disappointed that statements have been made without, paraphrasing, but that statements have been made without full, you know, without having, you know, full knowledge or full information at hand. So Weissman, I guess, has had some time to digest what happened over those 2 years. You know, he's basically coming out and saying that Robert Mueller was afraid to upset Donald Trump. I mean, a lot of the things that he's writing in the book echoes things that you had picked up on. You had said initially when the report came out that they were afraid that Robert Mueller was afraid of getting fired. They were afraid of being fired by Trump. And that apparently, even though reports were saying otherwise and we all thought that this couldn't possibly be the case, I guess that Trump did in fact have the capacity to completely shut the investigation down. He did have full power and authority to fire Robert Mueller and shut the whole thing down. So he revealed today, Andrew Weissman revealed today in a couple of interviews, one with one that's married to the former Federal Reserve chairman there.
Kelly Loeffler.
No.
You meant Miss. No, I'm sorry. I was thinking of the New York Stock Exchange chairman. That's Kelly Loeffler's husband. No, you're talking about Mrs. Greenspan.
Mrs. Greenspan.
Andrea Mitchell.
Yeah, Andrea Mitchell. When I guess apparently Mueller did, that's confirmed according to Weissman that he did subpoena Deutsche Bank for financial records. The White House apparently called the special counsel's office, infuriated, basically bullied Mueller into retracting that, not to look into in Trump's finances, the implicit threat being that they were going to, you know, fire Robert Mueller, shut the whole thing down. So he stopped that. And it seemed that Weissman had a lot of trouble because he's worked for Robert Mueller for many years and seems to really like him a lot and basically had a lot of trouble directly criticizing him. But I guess Weissman's ire was directed towards toward Aaron Zebley, who was the attorney sitting to Mueller's left during the hearings back in last year in July, and that Mueller actually credited in his testimony with being the one who was actually running the day-to-day operations of the investigation. Major decisions, apparently, and it seems like that's not at all contested, that major decisions were in fact made by Robert Mueller, and he was there, you know, on site and everything else, but that it was really Aaron Zebley who was doing all of the day-to-day legwork and operations and overseeing the minutia.
I caught a couple of the interviews with him, and he seemed to be trying really hard to be fair to Mueller. But the thing that I kept coming back to over and over again is that he was saying things that we were saying was probably happening inside the investigation way back when it was going on.
That it was
hamstrung from jump.
Yeah. Well, yes, for multiple reasons. That seemed to be kind of coming to the surface or bubbling to the surface. That Aaron Zebley, like, for example, Weissman was saying that Aaron Zebley, almost portraying him as the bad guy, which I think is what prompted Mueller to lash out today in his op-ed, that, and I heard two different versions, but that I guess whenever he and the investigators would approach Zebley with a line of, some evidence that would, you know, require a certain line of investigation, Zebley would shut it down. And even I read something that in the book, he accuses Zebley of gaslighting, him and others, making them think like they didn't know what they were talking about. They didn't, their perceptions were wrong. That if they were to pursue this line of investigation, it could breach a certain point with Trump that was undefined, that could, it was a line that they, it sounded like a line that would be crossed that Andrew Weissman as an attorney was like, what are you talking about? But it was almost like Zebley would play it as you're crossing a line that will flip out Trump so much that we're in big trouble or something wherein there was never real, the goalposts kept getting changed is what it sounded like. So he didn't directly blame Mueller. He blamed Mueller's sidekick, even though ultimately when Weissman is called out and said, yeah, ultimately the decisions were up to Robert Mueller. So it sounded like whatever the dynamics were going on there within the investigation were somewhat interesting and problematic. And I guess you have to figure that's what happens. You're talking about various different personalities. But for example, you know, Weissman cited not calling Don Jr. and Ivanka in for an interview was one of those things that Zebley shut down and said, you're crossing a line. And Weissman basically said that really was a specter hanging over the investigation, Trump's threats and his daily lashing out and calling it a witch hunt and attacking Mueller and others personally and referring to Weissman as, you know, the pit bull. And, it worked. He was able to bully them according to Weissman, which in effect, I mean, if you look at it from that perspective, that in and of itself to me would seem to be obstruction of justice. So he succeeded in doing that. And he also said not subpoena Mueller deciding not to subpoena Trump. He actually, if you think about it, he's actually contradicting what Robert Mueller testified to, because Mueller's testimony was pretty clear that it was a time factor. Weissman is saying it was a fear factor that Mueller was afraid of a major confrontation with the White House. And Weissman is saying that it kind of makes sense if you think about it. Like, you know, I mean, thinking back to the Independent Counsel, Ken Starr, there's no doubt in my mind that if shoes were on the other feet here, Ken Starr would have immediately subpoenaed a Democratic president. I think he did with Clinton.
Well, yeah.
So Weissman is saying bullshit. You know, he's basically calling bullshit on that. He's basically saying, look, if it sounds like what Weissman is saying is that we needed to subpoena the president right from the start. There was no need to negotiate with his attorneys, you know. There was no need for that. You subpoena him immediately, and Weissman's opinion is that by the time the investigation wound down, the Supreme Court would have already decided on that subpoena.
Well, one of the things that occurred to me as I listened to it too, is that in the back of all of this, the fact that from the get-go, Mueller had decided that nothing was going to come of it. Because his operating principle was that no matter what he found, he couldn't do a damn thing to the president.
Correct, yeah.
And so I was struck by the fact that, to me, that must have informed a whole bunch of that. It, you know, why are we going to do all this if we can't do anything about it or with it? If the president can't be charged, if we can't take the case to a grand jury, then how is this anything other than just a masturbatory exercise in law school essay writing?
Yeah, which, I mean, he was actually accused of, you know, or Zebley, who apparently probably was authored most of that report, was accused of, you know, this is a second year, you know, second L, you know, law school report, accused of that, ironically, by the likes of Emmett Flood, who was hired by Trump to represent him should he get impeached. So it's sort of like a foregone conclusion in a sense. It's kind of not surprising because a lot of times I think a lot of this shit's a big act. I really, even as
theater.
You know, deadpan as Robert, huh?
Theater.
It's exactly beautiful. It's theater. Even Robert Mueller as, you know, he's never been a charismatic speaker, you know, but he achieved what he said he was going to achieve in his hearings. He said, you know, he's not going to go outside the four corners of the report. And he shouldn't be here. He shouldn't be questioned because he's a prosecutor and all this stuff. And he pretty much stuck with what he said he was going to do. But even him, I mean, if you look back on old, hearings with him when he's FBI director, he's a bit of an actor too. Like he knows the camera's on him. They all know it. It's for show. And I'm not saying that he didn't take it seriously because I think what really his 12 years as FBI director, he knows intimately what the Russians do and what they're like. I think for him, it was the Russian prong of this, what they were doing with the 2016 election. What was interesting is that Weissman revealed this, like, again, getting back to the whole thing about an act. Weissman indicated in his book that I guess that Mueller went to Bill Barr weeks before the report was going to be, you know, submitted to him and informed him that he was not going to make a classic or traditional prosecutorial judgment on Trump's guilt or obstruction of justice. He was not going to make that traditional prosecutorial judgment. According to Weissman, Barr didn't say a word. And Weissman said it should have been incumbent upon Barr to turn around and say to Robert Mueller at that point in time, you need to, that's not right. You have to make, you have to advise us. You have to make a prosecutorial judgment. So fast forward, and I'm thinking back to the press conference, and when Barr and Rosenstein gave their little spiel on the investigation and basically said, that, you know, again, it's an act. It's theater, because the two of them acted like they were shocked and surprised. Why didn't Robert Mueller?
Yeah, that scene straight out of Casablanca. I am shocked to find out that there's gambling going on here.
Exactly. Well, you know, why didn't he, you know, he should have made a prosecutorial judgment. Well, he didn't. So we're going to say the president's free and clear. He's not guilty. When all the while they had already been tipped off weeks in advance. They already knew what he was going to do. So Barr saw that opportunity, and Weissman says, you know, Mueller was acting, you know, and he was being a good institutionalist. He was going there and letting him know, and they were good friends, apparently, and that basically Barr threw him under the bus and stabbed him in the back and allowed, you know, made it seem like, okay, he didn't say a word, and he held on to that and twisted it to his advantage and turned around and said, boom. It gave him the avenue or the opening to let Trump off the hook.
Right.
So today's op-ed from Robert Mueller, which is interesting. So again, it was an act, you know, in other words, it's like, it's theater, but today's op-ed where he didn't name Weissman specifically, but it was clearly timed because he knew the book was going to be released today. And Weissman had no comment, which is interesting how it flipped. Because usually it's Mueller that has no comment. But he basically said that he was disappointed. He said everybody has their opinions. But that he was disappointed that statements were being made, and again, I'm paraphrasing, without full knowledge of the information that was at hand. So that's sort of, and it's like, oh, that's interesting. So he's basically saying that, you know, Weissman is making these statements or accusations or analyzing how the investigation was handled, but that Weissman didn't have all the information at hand. So it's like, that's interesting. If he was part of your team, what information was Mueller and Zebley and the others it was a hierarchical setup, clearly, with this investigation. Mueller's basically saying they were privy to information that one of his best attorneys, and he defended him at the hearing, he defended Weissman. What information was he withholding, or Zebley and others withholding from their frontline attorneys, like Andrew Weissman? You know, what else could possibly be there that apparently he's saying Andrew Weissman didn't know that led to the decisions that were made? Weissman did talk about the special counsel rules and regulations, and I think that's another factor. And I was kind of happy to see something from somebody on the inside, like Weissman, pushing back against the problems with the special counsel regulations. Because I do think that, and I think you alluded to that in the beginning of this conversation, that, you know, Mueller was sort of a victim of those regulations. It's kind of nice to hear a different opinion than from the guy who wrote them, Neil Catchall, whatever his name is. Who has for some reason been given the uncontroverted or unchallenged platform, you know, on MSNBC and CNN or whatever, to be able to make the statement that, oh, the special counsel rules worked. Bullshit. You know, and he said that because he wrote them. Neil Catchall wrote them. So it was kind of nice to get a different opinion from somebody who said, no, the special counsel rules are fucked up. they were done in reaction to the independent counsel rules, where we had clearly have Ken Starr who overdid it. So because the special counsel is part of the Department of Justice, you know, the special counsel is bound by the Department of Justice. And if it's corrupt, especially...
Right, because the one thing we have to remember, Darlene, is that in comparing Trump versus the Clinton impeachment, there was a special counsel statute that specifically empowered special counsel.
I didn't know that. Okay.
And one of the first things that the Republicans did once W was in office was to let that statute lapse.
Well, of course. Of course. Rosenstein, he knows Robert Mueller extremely well. So he selected someone who he knew was not going to buck the institution, the DOJ, which thankfully, Weissman apparently also indicated that, the DOJ ruling that you can't indict a sitting president is far from anything that should be viewed as quote unquote settled law. And this is where it's the OLC opinion. And the OLC is extremely problematic because there's really nothing overseeing it. It's not like those opinions, I guess, can go to the Supreme Court and be vetted or, that would do the right thing.
I don't know how that could be, Darlene, because the Supreme
Court. But it is. I mean, I remember reading an article about that it's kind of a law unto itself within the confines of the DOJ. That's problematic, Bob. That's serious.
Well, that militates against every rule of Supreme Court procedure that I ever learned. The Supreme Court does not give advisory opinions. The Supreme Court will not take a case without case and controversy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would have to be somebody versus somebody. I'm not gainsaying you.
No, I know what you're. I know.
But no. I just that's why it's there, because it doesn't change until someone changes it inside the DOJ.
And that's the problem, because the DOJ is as politicized. It's bullshit if you say. Certainly, Bill Barr is just on the surface of it. He's just like an extreme of it. But what has an OLC opinion ever been challenged in the Supreme Court?
Not that I'm aware of, because again, I don't see how it could be.
Exactly.
Now,
there isn't standing to do it.
Well, there's
is that what
there,
you're saying that basically you
well,
can't.
Well, there's it's not just it's standing, it's jurisdiction. It's everything that the Supreme Court says that it is.
So on a
state level, just by way of analysis, for instance, on a state level, I'll use West Virginia. A West Virginia attorney general's opinion carries weight inside state government, and especially with regard to the executive branch. The same thing applies on a federal basis. The reason that you can't that OLC opinion has worked the mischief that it has is because an OLC opinion has the force of law inside the executive branch.
Inside the DOJ.
Well, inside the DOJ, but it extends beyond the DOJ. Okay, if the OLC opinion says that the president cannot be charged with a crime, that then applies to the U.S. Marshal Service. It applies to the FBI, who are part of the DOJ, of course.
Correct, because it's a
but it applies to the Secret Service, and that's why I have said for lo these many years now that 100 various law enforcement members from the federal government could watch Donald Trump take an AR-15 and mow down 100 human beings, and not one of them, even though it would be a felony committed in their presence, which then automatically makes that officer able to perform a warrantless arrest, not one of them could arrest him because they are bound by that bullshit.
And it's obviously cynical. Clearly that reveals how it's politicized, because clearly that OLC opinion benefits Trump. I mean, it clearly does.
But it's hold on, because there's a deeper question that attends this. It didn't just benefit Trump. It benefited W. It benefited his pappy.
Yes, it did.
It benefited Reagan. It benefited Ford. Okay? So the question is, even when there was a Democrat in office, why did no Democrat-appointed AG ever say, this thing's got to go? And the reason is it's a double-edged sword with sawteeth. Because, for instance, if you're Bill Clinton and you get rid of that OLC opinion, remember the heady days of the Arkansas Project, Darlene?
Mm-hmm.
Remember Richard Mellon Scaife funding literally a vast right-wing conspiracy against Bill Clinton? Well, if that thing had gone away and that special counsel statute is still in place, then you could very easily see the president of the United States being arrested. And no one, and that's part of the dynamic tension between the presidency and the other branches of government. Because as we've learned over the course of 213 years, the presidency always seeks to draw to itself more and more and more power. And so if you're a Democratic president and say you've got a hostile Republican Congress, you don't want to withdraw that damn thing, because that means that they can just pull some bullshit out of their hat and arrest your ass. And all they've got to do is have, you know, some mole inside the DOJ who's willing to do the dirty job.
But, okay, listening, you know, being a student of Dr. Bills and everything, the OLC opinion that you can't indict a sitting president is far from proven to be constitutional, or I mean
it's an unaddressed question,
and I would think I mean, and I could be wrong, but it seems like, you know, because Dr. Bill's really great at taking us, weaving us through so many, like in a maze, and then comes out with, you know, his conclusions.
Yeah, that's what I call his axe handle. It's all quiet and reasonable and rational, and then you get to minute 55,
awesome,
and he gets you in the back of the head with the axe handle.
And it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
My impression from Dr. Bill, could be wrong, is that ultimately he thinks that the OLC opinion that you can't indict a sitting president is unconstitutional based on his, you know, reading of what our framers, you know, wrote and said and thought and everything.
Well, it's certainly, I think, contrary to what the framers' intent was. And there we are back at originalism now, aren't we? That ought to be fun.
Yeah, that's another thing that trips you up in the quicksand.
But I disagree with Dr. Bill to the extent, and by the way, today's his birthday. It's Dr. Bill's birthday today.
Happy birthday, Dr. Bill.
This is his 80th birthday.
23 years young.
Yeah, Bill's 80 today.
What did you just say?
Bill is 80 today.
No way.
Yeah.
He does not look a day over 23.
No.
He's a sweet guy. He's sweet.
But I disagree
Long
with him.
Long live Dr. Bill.
Hear, hear. Many happy returns. I disagree with him, though,
That's
because
awesome.
While it is contrary to their intent and contrary to the spirit of the very idea of the Constitution, the way the administrative state has grown up, as we've just discussed, it is damn near impossible to challenge except within the four walls of the DOJ.
That's the problem. And all of because, and this I think was what Weissman was arguing, the special counsel needs to be outside the DOJ, which I don't know how much that melds into an independent counsel, but Mueller was bound by the OLC opinion. But I even question if he, and he testified years ago, I think in his last year as a, you know, as FBI director, he said, I am not a constitutional law expert. I'm not an expert in constitutional law. I somehow doubt that's changed over the last 6 or 7 years.
No, but you talk about how to challenge this thing. This is one
he
of the
didn't challenge it, Bob.
I know. But if you want to get this thing and get the Supreme Court's opinion on it, and this Supreme Court, I would not want its opinion on. You know,
that's the other problem.
That's another thing. Even if you've got a Democratic president who wants to be shed of it, it's still going to be eventually heard, because it has to be heard by the Supreme Court, because it's a case of first impression. But the only way it ever gets in front of the court is if someone does something affirmative that puts it there. And when we're talking about this particular OLC opinion, the only thing that gets it there is doing something contrary to the opinion. And this is where I got a big bag of bones to pick with Robert Mueller.
Mm-hmm.
Because he could have taken Donald Trump to the grand jury on those,
yep.
what was it, 10 obstruction of justice counts? 10?
Which Weissman said they were, yes, he obstructed justice.
Yeah, yeah. So you take those to the grand jury, and the grand jury indicts him. And he says,
yeah.
Here, I've got an indictment of the President of the United States. And somebody says, oh, but OLC opinion. Well, at that point in time, the indictment is not in the jurisdiction or purview of the DOJ anymore. That indictment belongs to the circuit judge whose grand jury issued the true bill, found the true bill.
Right.
And so then
now it
is in the Article 3 judiciary. And now it has to go up. Now it has to be ruled upon. But that's the only way to get it there, is to do something that gets it out of the four walls of the DOJ, Darlene.
Right. And you and I are climbing the mountain on different sides of the same to the pinnacle. Mueller
wimped out.
He wimped out or okay. Definitely he missed a huge fucking opportunity to test it. Okay, he missed a huge opportunity, but I think that's his character in terms of, if you look back, if you listen to the presser he did, the one time that he spoke out to announce the closing of the office, there's one line in there where he said, he was talking about the OLC opinion, and he said to indict, and again, I'm paraphrasing, because I can't remember back that far, but he said something along the lines of that, you know, they were bound by the OLC opinion, you can't indict a sitting president. To do so would be unconstitutional. I'm like, what the fuck is he talking about? He had already made, in his mind, that was already determined. And maybe that's the fatal flaw, because, you know, Andrew Weissman had said, written in his book or recently said that this is far from settled, you know, settled about you can't indict a sitting president.
It's not only so, far from settled, it is absolutely unsettled.
Exactly. It's and maybe that's the verbiage that Andrew Weiss, again, I'm paraphrasing because I've been looking at so many different articles, and I hope to read the book I just put into my local libraries, and I want to get a list for this book, and I want to read Strzok's book, Compromise. I heard Strzok's a pretty good writer, so I wanted to read that as well. But Robert Mueller already drank the Kool-Aid. He had drunk the Kool-Aid, and if you don't think that Rosenstein didn't know that, a devious fuck, he knew that. He knew it. He knew it, and this was well before, I have to look at the timing in terms of when Bill Barr reared his ugly ass head and was jealous because, you know, his former colleague Robert Mueller was becoming famous and he was sitting there in some law firm in obscurity. He had to go ahead and try to impose himself into this whole mess and saw the opportunity because he is an autocrat and a monarchist and, you know, saw his opportunity to basically create an authoritarian regime with Trump. So I don't know where I was going with this, but anyway, that's save me here, Bob, because that's basically.
Well, I can't fault it.
Back to what you were saying, it was a done deal. It was a done deal, but I don't.
Yeah, the fix was in.
The fix was in, but I don't. I think Mueller was coming from a more innocent perspective. I think that he's. I agree with everybody. Said he's an institutionalist. He believes in the institutions. They even said. I think Weissman said he's an institutionalist, or maybe it wasn't Weissman. There was somebody. It was his. It was one of the. Oh God. He's a ball-headed guy. He's very progressive. He worked under Mueller in the FBI. So he's an institutionalist. If he's upset with somebody within the DOJ, he's not going to make it public. He's going to go directly to that person and say, this is wrong. So the fact that he issued that letter, even though, you know, Barr sat there and said, oh, you know, this snitty letter, I don't think you wrote it. The fact that he approved that letter to go out and make it public, or that it became public, somebody released that letter, we still don't know who did, where he pushed back against Barr and said, you're misleading the public, that's extraordinary. Coming from the likes of a Robert Mueller. So, this is so convoluted. Ultimately, what it sounds like you're saying is that basically, if we're lucky enough to get Biden and Kamala installed next January, it sounds like what you're saying is that they're not going to do shit about this OLC opinion.
I would be surprised if they did. But
so we're fucked. I mean, it's the same fucking thing over and over and over again that we're going to see. And if you don't think that, oh God, because it seems like all of a sudden the OLC opinion takes a back seat when it's a Democratic president.
Well, it's more a matter of be careful what you wish for. Again, no presidency wants to put itself in jeopardy. But let me back up to something as well, and that's this. Decisions of constitutionality are made inside executive branch administrative agencies all the time. And they're made inside the legislative branch too. I can give you an example. When we were trying to come up with a means of ending mountaintop removal, a piece of legislation that would actually end mountaintop removal, we had long conversations. I mean, we wanted, you know, the ultimate goal would be to have a statute that simply says the practice known as mountaintop removal or defined in federal regulations as, and there's a laundry list of steep slopes and et cetera, is and shall be from the date of this legislation banned. but we ran across a problem. I raised the issue, and the people in the congressional offices went, yeah, well, Bob's right. And I'm no friend of the coal industry, but I said, look, you cannot have a taking of property without due process of law. This thing won't last an instant in front of the courts. If we just say that coal companies out there who have a legal property right in those coal seams and a right, a contractual property right to extract them, that we're just going to take that right away from them. Bang, done, over as of a given date. It just wouldn't fly. Okay. So if that's the case, then we had to come up with a means by which we could end it in such a way that we would not be engaging in a taking. And the way around that was to work within the permit structure. And so that's why the AIC Act reads the way it does today. Because there was a judgment made about constitutionality. The thing is, Darlene, all kinds of government agencies make decisions about constitutionality, but from Marbury versus Madison forward, and I was talking about Marbury versus Madison the other night.
Yep.
The Supreme Court is the final word on what is and is not constitutional. Mm-hmm. So whereas in the example that I'm using, where we're talking about something like mountaintop removal, I think we did the right thing. I think Mueller did the wrong thing. Mueller assumed, made a constitutionality assumption that, frankly, is not anywhere near a legal consensus. Most of the time when organizations or agencies or whatever make constitutionality determinations, they do so when a consensus has been reached within the agency, whether it is or is not constitutional. But in this case, it was one man acting unilaterally to declare that basically there was nothing he could do, that he was hamstrung. When in fact, my theory is that when you force a constitutional question, you're actually doing the right thing. Because then you get an answer one way or the other. But again, there are lots of instances where people say, well, yeah, we'll get it. We'll get an answer. Yeah. We'll damn sure know whether it's constitutional or not. And given the nine that are sitting up there right now, we know which way that decision's going to be made. And it'll fuck every other case we have for a million years. This wasn't like that, though, Darlene.
Right, and this is where I guess it's true that, you know, him being in his, I don't think it's coming from a place of avarice or.
No. This is him.
Robert,
this is that Marine lawyer that he is. He snaps a salute and says, yes, sir.
Exactly. And that's been of great benefit to him. I think in terms of him personally, the reasons that he went into the Marines was very altruistic. But you're right. This is where his institutionalism is snapping, you know, the salute, boom, boom, boom. Rosenstein knew that. It's a missed opportunity, and that he had already concluded something that. And no one, and I don't recall, a person who came close to it was Quigley, the House of Representatives. He's pretty sharp, but nobody really questioned him on that. Like, if it were me, I would have said, I disagree that, your assumption that it was unconstitutional to indict a sitting president. No one questioned him on that, it was a foregone conclusion. So Robert Mueller already went in with a frame of reference and a framework. Quigley got close at least to saying, did your team, and I wish he had asked Zebley that question, because Quigley had said, didn't your team discuss the 5-year statute of limitations on indicting a sitting president? Now, at least Mueller was very clear, yeah, you know, once he leaves office, you can indict him. But Quigley said, you know, are you aware that there's a 5-year statute of limitations on this? And Mueller was fucking clueless about it and said, no, I don't know about that. How could they not have discussed that? Now, I don't know if Weissman's book talks about that or not, but that would have been a great question to ask Aaron Zebley, because if he was running the day-to-day operations, I would think if anybody knew, it would be, you know, it would be him. So that's another thing that got missed in this, but no one asked him. No one challenged him on that premise.
And moreover, you know? Moreover, Darlene, the other part of this is that it's all in how you ask the questions. Now, I clown around and play fast and loose sometimes here, but you have to have somebody who's willing to get out there and ask questions that are uncomfortable and might even seem ridiculous at first blush. But I would have paid good money. And if I didn't have it, I would have borrowed it and paid it. To see some member of Congress, Senate or House, look Robert Mueller square in the eye and say, Mr. Mueller, we're going to do ourselves a law school hypothetical here. I'm sure you remember law school hypotheticals. Well, here's the hypothetical we're going to work with. And we're back to what I've talked about so many times. Mr. Mueller, 25 members of the FBI and 25 members of the Secret Service and 25 members of the U.S. Marshals and 25 postal inspectors and 25 members of the Shore Patrol and 25 members of the military police and 25 members of the air police. Name every law enforcement agency inside the federal government, make 25 of them, witness the President of the United States commit a felony in their presence. Here, Mr. Mueller, let's make it easy. They witness the President of the United States murder someone with a gun.
Yeah, let me quote directly from what Trump said during the campaign, Mr. Mueller.
Yeah.
Unquote. Yeah.
Right. Are you sitting here telling us that that OLC opinion says that the president cannot be indicted for that? And if you are, sir, show your work.
Show your work.
Yeah, you know how. Show your work. Let's see the scratch paper you worked it out on. How did you reach that conclusion?
You know what he would say?
What?
But respectfully, what he said.
That calls snidely? For speculation on my part.
No, snidely to Louis Gohmert, he would look at you and say, "I take your question."
I don't think that's the same as the stupid Gohmert question. Because if it's asked by asked by someone who isn't Louis Gohmert.
But you're right. He would no, you're you are right. I'm behind.
Let a Katie Porter ask that question.
She would have been terrific. I'm playing with you here. I'm just having some fun with this. Yeah, no, you're right. He would say, I'm not going to engage in that speculation. But maybe it would get him to think a little bit. Because as smart as he is, as good as I think he's good. I do think he's a good man. He's clueless. He can be clueless. So we're in a bind, and maybe this is what you know, burgeoning, struggling democracies are like. I don't know. there's all these competing pressures and stressors and everything else. I am not willing to accept the special counsel regulations worked. I'm sorry, I'm not. If they're under the guise of the DOJ and if you can corrupt the DOJ, you're fucked.
You just get to live with it. And we hope the Republic survives.
And that's what troubles me. You know, again, you know, I've got the Kamala Harris sign on my lawn, you know. And Biden says that he won't interfere with the DOJ. Now, that's a very clever way of not committing to, you know, openly saying, I'm going to pursue this motherfucker once I'm in the Oval, okay? The motherfucker being Trump. It's a crafty way of saying it. I can't imagine he wouldn't want to see him. See Trump's ass nailed to the wall because it got personal, and it's going to get personal tonight, you know, because it's going to bring up, you know, I think if Trump brings up his deceased son, Biden's deceased
son, Bo,
you know, he's probably being prepped and prepared for Hunter to be, you know,
They are ready based on something that was said earlier today. One of the things I neglected to mention earlier, Darlene, was this bilious crap where the maggot gang was saying, you know, not only is the Joe Biden using Adderall, you know, that's Trump. As was pointed out earlier, shame on the multimillionaire for-profit media for ignoring what Noel Kassler has been saying for over a year now, that he's a junkie, he's a speed freak. But they've also said Chris Wallace gave him the questions in advance, and he's going to have an earpiece. They're literally mining everything that has been said. You remember when we were quite convinced that that dim leader had somebody in his ear? You remember that? And the lump on his back?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're dredging up all of this shit. And the Biden campaign said, well, okay, I mean, if that's the game you want to play, then we'll just say that... the Trump campaign has begged Chris Wallace not to bring up the 208,000 dead Americans on Donald Trump's watch. How do you like them apples? You really want to play this shit? Because we're ready.
Yeah. But here's the thing, though, Bob. Trump is a caged animal at this point. And nothing's more dangerous than a caged animal.
Stoke the damn stroke. I mean, that's what the New York Times did last night when they put out another story saying that his entire story of his wealth was, quote, all a hoax.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. All a hoax. And, you know, the timing of the release of the New York Times story is, you know, there's a reason for it.
And I would like to.
This
just dawned on me, Darlene. I would like at this point to suggest one element of the drinking game for tonight.
I'm already there.
little pre-show.
Pretty much. I don't know how I'm going to get through it otherwise.
Okay, so pick your poison. You know, vodka. Deep Eddie flavor.
Kraken black spice rum.
Go bigger.
I would not. You know,
go bigger, go home.
Bob, I would. No, I'll be puking and throwing up on the floor, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's like, I'm like, is it going to come to fisticuffs? Okay, just had to say that, but go ahead. Sorry.
No, pick your poison. We have a listener who will be probably, who probably already has a bottle of Deep Eddie. Lemon vodka in the freezer.
Oh,
Oh, it's not. It's good. It's good.
Get on that listener.
Oh, it's good.
Get on that listener. That's tough. That's tough shit, man.
But, you know, the more well-heeled among us may have a bottle of old Weller, old antique 107.
Oh.
But whatever it is.
Damn, still looking for that.
Whatever it is, you got your little shot glass there and you're ready. And the first time, because this will happen, the first time he gets in trouble, this is Donald Trump's verbal version of the rope-a-dope. Okay, we all know what the rope-a-dope was. That was when Ali would go into the corner and just put his gloves up over his face and absorb some blows and kill clock. Well, the verbal rope-a-dope for Donald J. Trump, and the J stands for emphasis on dope, is, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me. The first time he says, and every time after he says, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, you got a drink. I have a feeling people will be shit-faced, because every time he gets cornered, he'll excuse me. And if Joe Biden would say, what, did you fart? And I saw an example earlier today of, you know, debate zingers. Fritz Hollings of South Carolina was debating a senatorial challenger, a Republican named McMasters, back in the 90s. And he called on, McMaster called on Hollings to produce, I don't know, a drug test or something. And Hollings immediately responded, well, I'll be happy to provide the results of a drug test quick as you provide results of an IQ test. And that was the end of that shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess that...
But, of course, if Joe Biden said, if Joe Biden uses that, then the headlines next morning will be, Joe Biden plagiarizes dead South Carolina senator. That's the other problem with all of this. It's necessary for Biden to do this just to show his vigor and his intellect, but there's not going to be any winning tomorrow morning, especially not at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and certainly not at Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground.
No. And the former chief of staff, Mulvaney.
Yeah.
You caught this headline, right? What he said, the number of debates. He said, oh, this is going to be the only one that Trump's not going to allow. I would hope that, I would love to see, just for kicks and shits and giggles, I would love to see Biden start walking around the stage a little bit. Leave the podium. I don't think he will, but leave the podium, start walking around, see if Trump does
a stalk.
Yeah, there's a Hillary looming, a stalk, looming up behind him. And for Biden to turn around and just give him a zinger and say, get away from me, you fucking plague rat. You know, something like that. I would love to see that. So I guess getting back to everything that's going down in terms of the Mueller investigation, again, hindsight's 2020, but it sounds like your point about Mueller challenging the OLC opinion, bringing it out of the DOJ and into the, into the courts and up to the Supreme Court is a missed opportunity, sadly. And that I would agree 100% with Andrew Weissman that some dangerous precedents have been set, because ultimately you're right. You know, not bringing in Don Jr. for questioning because he's too fucking stupid. And not bringing in Ivanka because she's too fucking pretty. Just the precedents that were set were just dangerous. And I'm not saying that Robert Mueller wasn't aware of this shit. I think he was squeezed. I think he was in a vice. And I do think he was squeezed to a certain degree. But I cannot get past the fact that it was a preconceived notion in his mind that to indict a sitting president was unconstitutional, and that had not reached that level that's a presumption. It just didn't reach that level of scrutiny of presumption, quite frankly. The other interesting thing that came out, I don't know if you saw this, and again, it just shows how corrupt things are in the government, how corrupt, and even attorneys, especially, QAnon Republican, lickspittles on it. It was Peter Strzok. As much as obviously the focus, he had an extramarital affair, all of that, but he's been a clear voice. He's been a clear voice, in the aftermath of this. And apparently, I'm like, he was so destroyed. And you've commented on that, about how he was just pummeled and ripped to shreds by the Trump administration and the press. Well, apparently he got a teaching job at Georgetown Law or Georgetown University. I think it's the university, which is not bad. And he's got the book out, Compromise, which I sent to my local library. Said, if I can't get, Andrew Weissman's book, and Compromise is available, put me on the waiting list. And apparently he's a very good writer. He's got a very clear and very direct and distinct voice. But I guess that his attorney, I don't know if you saw this, that his attorney put forward a letter to Emmett Sullivan in the courts that apparently his notes, his when he was an FBI agent, that he's accusing, Strzok is accusing Michael Flynn's defense of doctoring his notes.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah.
Did you see that? And the attorney, sounds pretty good. The attorney is Aiton Goldman. And he sent this to Emmett Sullivan, which is fucking awesome because, Emmett Sullivan's still, they're still roiling around at that level in the DC, the U.S. District Court there about, what to do with Flynn. So this is about Flynn. And he's basically accusing Flynn's defense, the attorneys, of doctoring his FBI notes, putting in false dates.
Yeah, and, to make it seem and that's a say bye-bye to your license thing. But the thing is,
exactly.
he sent it to Emmett Sullivan. Did he copy it to the court? Because that's not a fraud on Peter Strzok. That's a fraud upon the court.
It's a letter that Eitman Goldman, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing his first name, who is Strzok's attorney, sent via email yesterday to Emmett Sullivan in the United States versus Michael T. Flynn case, that he's writing on behalf of his client, Peter Strzok, in this case, that and he included attachments to this filing that included notes written by Strzok as well as text messages sent or received by Strzok, and that some of the notes appear to have been altered, on at least two occasions there were handwritten additions, not written by Mr. Strzok, inserting dates apparently designed to indicate the date or dates of which the notes were written. On at least one occasion, the date added is wrong and could be read to suggest that a meeting at the White House happened before it actually did. So he copied those two pages of notes with he highlighted it. The attorney highlighted to indicate the handwritten notations that Strzok did not write, and that I also note that the texts of Mr. Strzok that were attached to the defendant's pleadings include portions that had not previously been released, have nothing to do with the Flynn case or more broadly with the Department of Justice. Finally, the filing, Mr. Flynn's filing, appears to violate the court's order of these notes to file any additional supplements to pending motions until the government's Brady production is complete. Now, mind you, this is coming from the Daily Mail. But it looks pretty fucking legit. So his attorney is accusing the other attorneys of having doctored shit. And we know who's representing Flynn now.
So, refresh my recollection.
What is her name? She's like a QAnon. The hell's her name?
Oh, a nutbag.
Flynn's attorney. Yeah. It was made to Emmett Sullivan. Goldman is his attorney. Let's see if I can find the name of the lady. Because I don't know if you listened to Sidney Powell. Flynn's attorneys, Sidney Powell and Jesse Binal, filed the documents on September 24th claiming that they were evidence of, quote, outrageous deliberate misconduct by FBI and the and DOJ playing games with the life of a national hero. Which, really? Flynn is a national hero.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so Sidney Powell
probably has dinner with Q every day.
Exactly. Exactly. QAnon.
Might even be
exactly,
Q.
Exactly. Well, that's a brilliant point. You know, and Flynn, you saw that whole allegiance thing to that Flynn and his family did to QAnon.
Oh, yeah.
In his backyard
But you saw the story also in the last couple of weeks that one of the biggest QAnon websites got busted. And we know who was behind it now. And he's an IT security guy for Goldman Sachs.
It's so convoluted. Oh, Mike. There's your conspiracies. Jesus.
I mean, maybe it wasn't Goldman Sachs. It might have been one of the other big banking houses, but yeah.
But I think Strzok is, you know, he's going after this shit. And, you know, these FBI analysts, these FBI agents, and he's been around a long time. He was in the FBI for, 20, 30 years. You know, they're trained to remember this stuff. They're trained to, you know, so when he's sitting there saying, this is a forgery, this is not something I wrote, this is not a date that was written, this is doctored, that's pretty serious.
Yeah.
It's exactly. It's got some weight to it. So a lot of it's redacted, and what they, you know, it's very hazy. But he's going after it and saying, you know, you're violating. You know, it's been doctored, and also you're violating this Brady thing that you weren't supposed to present supplemental material. So clearly, Flynn's attorneys are playing dirty on every conceivable level, but thank goodness Strzok is calling him out.
They're playing dirty, but they didn't expect to get caught. Because
exactly,
that's dangerous shit.
And I'm wondering if Goldman, the Flynn prosecution was via email, I'm not, it's regarding United States versus Michael T. Flynn case. So, Strzok and his attorney are interceding into this, saying, by the way, I think they're alerting Emmett Sullivan. So that's the question you were asking. They were alerting the judge, or were they part of the case? It sounds like they're not part of the case. But they're alerting him that there's something fraudulent here. Is that what you were asking? Because I think that's what's going on here. Because he sent it via email.
But the thing is, it... There's part of the case and there's part of the case.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this could still be not just lose your license. This could be spend some time in the Gray Bar Hotel material.
Exactly. And so it seems like he's got a good attorney who's alerting the judge that there's something wrong here. There's foul play here. And it appears to violate, and maybe that's why it was sent via email to alert.
But
Emmett
it's
Sullivan
also
who,
you send it to Emmett Sullivan, but you also CC it to the court, because that way you can't be accused of engaging in ex parte communications with the bench.
Well, that's a very good question, and I'm not seeing a carbon copy here. Oh no, it was carbon. It looks like it's very weird, though. It looks like it was copied to the DOJ.
Well, that's a shot across Bob Barr's bow.
Yep, and look, I'm seeing a and it's weird how it's it looks like a scanned in version of the letter to Sullivan from Eitan Goldman. And it says carbon copy DOJ, which is like highlighted in sort of a gray box. Yeah.
Well, let me share something with you. I got a note a little bit ago from Cynthia out in the Bay Area. Cynthia says, I'm in the middle of my physical therapy exercises as I listen to the program, and I just had to break off for a second to say that I am sure impressed by the people you have in your community. You have some amazing, smart, and knowledgeable people here, and I'm certainly enjoying this discussion. Now back to my exercises. And so that's, you're the only caller for this evening, so I think that was
a massive compliment.
It was huge. It was huge.
That's huge. Thanks, Cynthia.
As to the debate this evening, you know, I'm still amazed that how is it that Chris, you know, there may not be any more debates after this. How is it Chris Wallace gets the nod?
Mulvaney said it. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Oh, God.
But anyway, our buddy Matt out in San Francisco wrote a few minutes ago and said, subject line debate. So, according to the talking heads, most Americans are already firmly in their blue or red voting camps. So tonight's about moving the undecided. I happily accept the label of political junkie. I also understand why some people choose not to follow the daily ins and outs of politics. What I don't understand is how someone could be undecided at this stage of the game. And I'm right there with Matt on this. I don't know what bell jar you live under in Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium, or what cave how deep and under which rock you live. But, you know, we've talked about the 33 to 37, 38, 39% of America that's just, you know, they're a member of the cult. How many sick people, Matt asks, dead people, unemployed people, and how much suffering has to happen before some people can make a decision? How can you not know who you're voting for right here, right now? I don't just want to know who these, I don't want to just see some of these undecideds interviewed. I'd like for them to have EEGs and very slow moving MRIs and brain scans and blood work. And because I want to figure out what the hell's wrong with somebody that they can't make their fucking mind up nearly 4 years into this madness. But yeah. Matt concludes, the fact that there is a chance of this jackwagon getting 4 more years just informs me of how dysfunctional this society has become.
Oh, it is. It is. Yes.
And yes, remember back early in the program, Steve sent me that link to the CNN, let's see how Republicans in Georgia are responding to the fact that Donald Trump is a great big giant honking howling tax fraud. Well, he's a brilliant man. I didn't even have to play the video. I've heard it all goddamn day long. I've seen it on comment threads. Well, how'd the New York Times get his tax information? That ought to be investigated by the FBI. And what about them Democrats? Now, never mind the fact that Joe Biden's taxes have been on his website since God was a baby.
Yeah, it's all...
Never mind the fact that Barack Obama released his taxes as a matter of course.
Yeah.
No, of course not. Yeah. And by the way, I mentioned the QAnon thing. Jeremy cleared that up a little bit. Jeremy in Vermont said the QAnon guy was a tech security for Capital One. It was Capital One. And he got caught, and he was like, "Well, I don't know. It's patriotism, freedom, 9/11, y'all." You know, the usual.
I don't know if you saw the other article about, I haven't had a chance to read it. Something about Nancy Pelosi is trying to, galvanize Democrats in the House for the possibility that there'll be no clear electoral college winner. Did you see that?
Yeah.
That it's a one in 100 year possibility. Again, it's Politico.
Right, and some of this is pot stirring. That you got to read that crap extra close.
Well, here it is. It was NPR. They're the ones that reported this yesterday. For a rare possibility, the House may decide the election.
But this is alongside
the steady
drumbeat that I've seen in the last couple of weeks of, oh my God, Joe Biden's not out knocking on people's doors. Why isn't Joe Biden campaigning in person? Does his campaign lack energy?
Okay, yeah, there's a fucking pandemic going on.
Yeah, of all the stuff you could focus on, and that's what you got.
You know, it would be great but he probably won't do it because he's probably too polite. Unless Trump pushes him over the edge with any comments about Beau Biden and even, you know, his living son, Hunter, as if Biden points out that Trump paid more to Stormy Daniels.
Yeah.
The United States government, you know what, $130,000,
$150,000? And you know how you do that? You go, yeah, well, individual one over here paid $130,000 for sex, but $750 to the country that gives him freedom.
To the country. Yeah, exactly. And is covered.
Do that. Oh, Jesus, Joe, please. Please, Joe, call him individual one just once. Just once.
Oh, that's brilliant. Make call him individual one.
Make a hillbilly happy.
It's sad because ultimately we got, you know, and maybe this is something for the history books, you know, which is, you know, clearly frightening because, you know, Barr said, well, it depends on who writes the history, right? But it's like future generations, assuming we somehow manage to pull our asses out of this hellhole that we're in, they're going to look back and say, what was it? What is it in the dysfunction of this country, which I think was a Matt that was talking about how dysfunctional we, that continue to enable this person, that continue to, well, poor excuse for a human being, Donald Trump. The enabling and continuing to cater to him, and when it's very clear he's a grifter, he's nothing but like Robert De Niro says, you know, a mafia wannabe, and it's like, what are we doing? You know, what's wrong with us? It's funny because I guess in Canada, they have the Stanley Cup ice hockey.
Oh yeah, Lord Stanley's Cup, right?
And no one. There's over 51 players and everything else. They're like, what's going on? No one tested positive for COVID-19. What's going on with this? And I mean, I'm listening to radio programs. I was like, well, they. Canada doesn't have Donald J. Trump as their leader. You know, it's very simple. They took COVID-19 seriously. Justin Trudeau. And it's like there's a cluelessness going. It's beyond me. Why this man, Donald J. Trump, has been enabled for as long as he has been enabled. You know, 20 years of the tax returns, what, 11 of the past 20, 11 of the past 18 years, he's paid nothing. $750 in taxes, you shitting me?
Yeah.
And you know, I look at what I've overpaid into the system.
I forget who it was that said it. I saw it on social media earlier today. But it's, again, it's another one of those I'd pay to see this happen moments. Have Joe Biden reach into his suit coat, pull out seven $100 bills and a 50, and walk over and plop it on the podium and say, "Here, Donnie, here's next year's taxes on me, Chief."
Yeah, that would be very.
And then watch him, and then watch Donnie grab the money and stuff it in his coat. And this just rolled around. Dave, I just saw it, and David in South Carolina, Stan, sent it along too. And folks are kind of, ha ha, what a bunch of fuck ups. The Trump campaign has already sent out an email, Darlene, to his entire email list, claiming that he just finished debating Joe Biden and won.
I finished debating Joe Biden. This debate will go down in history. I showed the American people that I...
Yeah, he's already sent out his victory declaration. But the thing is...
This is reality.
Well, but...
Not the other reality, the real reality.
Yeah, here's the funny thing. It looks like a fuck-up, and it probably is a fuck-up, but it could have a net positive effect for the maggots, or for him. Because the maggots... Oh, it's over? Damn. Okay, well, he won. And so, you know, Nicola Post, they'll be out there on the comment threads. Oh, he's so dominated. You got to dominate.
Oh, my gosh. What are we coming to? Well, I mean, I don't know what British comedian was that said it, but, you know, he said, Americans do stupid really well. You say, we have the village idiot who talks to the clouds. Your village idiot is president of the United States.
Ding.
You know? And it's just like, oh, God. And, you know, that's fine by me. They can call us out on it because they're right. Because they are right. So, anyway, I probably should depart from the... stress line to allow someone else to get in and weigh in. But I find these debate things stressful, you know, because I am concerned about Biden's ability to hit back quickly, because Trump is just dirty. He's willing to get down into the muck and the dirt. I don't even say quicksand, but just the mud. And being obnoxious and like he's in the WWF or E, I don't know which one it is enough to make him look like he's strong, you know, whereas my hope is that Biden, you know, and Biden, assuming, you know, the stutter is the factor here, you know, he'll stumble. So hopefully, his handlers have prepared him very well for this confrontation. Because, like I said, I think that Trump is sort of in a caged animal kind of situation, and he's got to prove that he can come out swinging. So his ego is, and his narcissism is at play here. Because like he has said, he doesn't like to lose. So it should be interesting. I'll be stressed watching it, but I want to be relaxed. How do you relax besides drinking? Is there any other way?
Well, that's for
get yourself through this. How do you get through this?
That's foreclosed for me now. I've quit everything.
You're going through it. You're going into it totally pure.
I'm
going
to be chewing nicotine. I'm going to be chewing nicotine pouches like bubble gum. Fortunately, there's a couple that taste like bubble gum.
I guess I shouldn't complain. So,
oh,
okay.
This is going to be one of those nights when I'm like, you know, I mean, you know, I'm kind of committed. Because, see, this is the thing. It's not like I had to quit drinking or something. It's just that I realized that Who said it? Friend of mine was reminding me. The drinking bone is connected to the smoking bone.
Interesting. Yes, it's oral addictions. Yeah,
and
I
so
get it.
You know, if I'm fortunately, I'm going to be driving. That's another good thing. But amateur Uber driver tonight. Because if I was just sitting here watching it, it'd be like flip, and then probably 5 minutes after that, 15 days of not smoking would be wasted.
Yeah.
But I got to share this with you, Darlene. I just checked, just on a hunch, I checked my spam file.
Okay.
Bob.
Cool.
No. Bob, this debate will go down a subject line. I finished debating Joe Biden. I finished debating Joe Biden. I got it too, Darlene.
This you debate, asked for it, though. You put yourself on the email list, my friend.
This debate will go down in history. I showed the American people that I will always fight to put America first, no matter what, and that I will never stop working to make America great again. I know the fake news media, and this is why I don't think it was a mistake. I know the fake news media will only report lies about the debate and how strong our movement is, which is why I was really disappointed to see that you chose not to step up and help make today our best fundraising day ever. You've always been one of my strongest supporters. I can't win in November without you, Bob, so I'm giving you one more chance to get on the donor list I see. 800% match extended. My team is handing me a printed list of every donor who stepped up at this critical moment. Will I see your name? It's currently missing.
Well, a shameless opportunity to fundraise, but wouldn't it be great if Biden had that in his hand and presented it during the debate and said, this was sent on, you know, this was sent at, 7:30 or whatever. Before the debate.
Yeah, and meanwhile the Biden team, Vice President Biden, via Twitter, it's debate night, so I've got my earpiece and my performance enhancers ready. it's a picture of a set of earbuds and a pint of Jenny's ice cream performance enhancer. Salted peanut butter chocolate flex.
Ooh, chocolate is my thing, but oh boy, that sounds really good. Pure chocolate. I actually, I signed up for 303-33, during the, very well done Democratic convention this year. And so I keep getting emails that if I want, I could enter into having Joe Biden give me a personal phone call after the debate. But I don't have the guts to do it at this point because there's so many things I would be like, Joe would have to sit with me for about 2 hours in order for me to tell him everything that I think needs to be done to correct this country.
Yeah. Hi, Joe. We've got a list.
Exactly. Which I give the guy credit that he's going to make a phone call after a debate as important as this. But apparently some lucky person is going to get a call. It won't be me because I didn't enter into it. You have to donate and everything else. But I guess I'm not, sometimes I, like once in a great while I can be lucky with entering into a competition. I try to, just to do another real quick switcheroo before I hang up. I try to enter a competition. My local radio station, in honor of my new North Deck, to get a Rosto Fiocco Mino pizza oven for my deck. It's an outdoor pizza oven.
Nice.
Yeah, I didn't win it.
Damn it.
I didn't win it, but
The general managers, the radio station general managers next door neighbor won it.
Well, yeah, a couple of towns over in Thomaston, some lady won it, and good on her. You know, good for her. I had a good feeling about that. You know, I think it's a possibility. But I think the universe basically said, it's not right for you. So that's basically how I'm going to view it. But right now we have, I wouldn't have been able to, even if I wanted, I wouldn't have been able to use it anyway. We have pouring rain going on, which is great news. Because
it's been raining here all day too.
But we have a drought in my section of Connecticut, the north and I think northwestern, and then I think in the eastern, we're short 11 inches. So we're getting some rain. There's going to be some pretty serious weather coming in tonight, overnight, thunderstorms and everything else. But I'm actually grateful for that because I'm beginning to get worried about my 100, you know, my well, which is 100, only 100 feet deep. So I was getting very worried about that. I was like, am I going to run out of water? But we're getting some serious rain. So that's a cool thing. So, you know, I guess it's a toss-up. Rosa Fioco pizza oven. I could be outside, you know, making a pizza for myself.
Or yeah, I still think the little Blackstone tabletop model griddle would be perfect for you.
Did you send me that information? I didn't see it because I looked.
I don't know, but I mean, if you just look up, you know, Blackstone griddles, it's just a little tabletop affair. It's, you know, propane powered, but it'll do lots of bacon. It'll do, you know, great scrambled eggs. It'll do pancakes.
That would be lovely.
And you know, you're up in New England, so you probably got access to some pretty kick ass maple syrup.
Well. My brother makes it.
Ooh, you've got a hookup for maple syrup? Tell me more.
I've got a hookup, and he does it pure, and it's a family event. There's no shit added to it. He will sleep next to that. He will sit there all night long, overnight, to make sure it does not boil. Like, and it's delightful. And I'm like, my brother's name is Philip, and I said, you need to market this shit. Phil's maple syrup. And
how many trees does he tap?
That's a good question. I would have to ask him that. I would think maybe five or six maples. And that's unique because at least he lives about 20 minutes away from me. And unfortunately, the maple trees in where I am are succumbing to something.
Ooh.
The maple trees are not—they're not doing well. I've lost one. I'm noticing two others in my backyard. There's some sort of a blight or something that's affecting them. There's one maple tree. My neighbor across diagonally across from me has two beautiful ones. One is just exquisite. It's just gorgeous. The one next to it. This happened last month. I heard a huge crack, and the tree looks extremely healthy. This was in the aftermath of Storm Isaias that caused us to lose power for anywhere from 4 to 9 days. I just heard this huge crack, and I'm like, what the hell is that? And I'm like, that sounded like a tree branch or something. And when I looked at my neighbor's property, the smaller maple, just this bough, this ginormous bough, just collapsed.
I wonder what kind of parasites infect. Oh dear God! Please, not something.
Exactly.
Not something that goes. Right please, God, goddess of irony, not something that goes after the maple trees. You know my friends up
right
in the,
next to the big one.
Ooh, yeah. My friends up in the Northwoods in Wisconsin make maple syrup every year. And, you know, there'll still be snow on the ground when they're tapping the trees and everything. And then they boil, but not boil down the sap to reduce it. Has your brother ever brought you any maple candy where you boil it down to a solid and it's just a hunk of maple sugar? Oh my God.
He has, but not. From his trees, there's this is what's really cool. There is a maple sugar. There's like a whole farm near him that does all this stuff, and they have hundreds of maples that they tap. And they have a store, and they do all of the maple candy. And he brought me some from there. And they were so awesome. They shared their tricks and information with him, which is like the coolest thing. Because he, when he said, I really want to do this, he's kind of a woodsy woodsman kind of guy. And he went there and said, look, I have some maple trees. I want to tap them. What can you, you know, is there any information you can give me? They were very generous. Very, very generous. And it was delightful. That kind of sugar maple candy can be kind of a little, almost a little too sweet for me. But the maple syrup I love because you can mix it in with your oatmeal and everything. But Phil has, he hasn't gotten into the candy making yet, but he'll post pictures and things on Facebook. They have huge vats and stuff, and it's like a family thing, and he does the maple syrup, and it's pure. It's not, he doesn't add milk, because I guess a lot of times they'll add dairy, like milk, with the more commercialized, maple syrup, because, to prevent the boiling, because once it boils, I guess you're screwed in terms of the taste. That's my understanding. So, I'm fortunate to at least have that. And it's liquid gold. It really is liquid gold. So, and it's the season. So, but I'm hoping that his trees are doing well, because here where I am, our trees are dying. The maple trees are dying. The bough that collapsed, thank goodness, my neighbor's son is constantly mowing under it. Thank goodness it didn't happen when he was mowing under, because that would have killed him. It's a huge bough. So, something's going on. And we're also losing, our spruce trees. There's some sort of a blight that's happening. And of course, you know me, I have my Bruce the spruce and I have Hermione the hemlock spruce yes. combo. Across the street from me, all the spruce trees are dying. They're all dying. There's something that's eating them from the bottom up.
Ugh.
And it's on Catholic Church property. They have like over 23 acres of beautiful, beautiful land. And I'm like, I'm hoping they're going to cut those trees down and soon. Because either they're going to collapse or whatever is affecting them, whatever blight is affecting them, I'm fearful it's going to come over to my property.
Oh, you've got a reason to worry.
Well, yeah, we have problems here because a lot of the trees are dying, and I'm assuming in part it's probably climate change related. But that's part of the problem with what happened with the losing power. And again, I mentioned this to you before. I think that, you know, I don't think our public utilities, electrical utilities, should be for profit. It should be
right. I'm right there with you.
Nonprofit. It should be. And back in 2011, when we had this, and we're based on the latest meteorological reports, we're set up for another situation in October where we could have a major snowstorm, like the one that happened in 2011 that basically quote unquote canceled Christmas. Canceled Halloween. And what came out of that with Governor Malloy, the Democratic governor, was he went after Eversource and United Illuminating, to get their acts together, because people lost power back in 2011, anywhere from 4 to 9 days. I got deathly ill. It was really bad because I was too cold for too long because it was in October, November. So Malloy's solution was cut the trees, trim all the branches. He said, I hate trees. I mean, this is a Democratic governor who is basically a corporatist, and he's like, I hate trees. So we had the problem with Storm Isaias, 9 years later. They've been trimming trees. you know, in terms of what happened back in 2011, but they only do it once every 4 years. So my brother was like, a lot can happen to a tree in 4 years, you know?
Oh,
so
yeah.
There's something going, a lot can happen. So there's indications a lot of trees are dying. So different species of trees. So you're talking maples, spruce trees, something's going on. So we're back in the same situation. And it's very concerning. It's very concerning because I don't, my brother hasn't said anything about the maple trees on his property. But again, he's 20 minutes away. Here, I'm seeing a problem with the maples in my town. So, I'm thinking it's climate change related. I'm thinking it's invasive species. I think it's a combination of a lot of those things. So.
In the era of climate change, it's hard to say.
You just don't know. You just don't know.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
And on the way out, a giggle, Darlene, because we need one. Oh, by the way,
I could use one for sure.
Your heart will be warmed by this. First of all, thank you to Beth in Dallas for jumping in this evening. Thank you, Beth. And thank you very kindly to our buddy Jug of Punch, who just tossed $80 in the kitty in honor of the 80th birthday of our dear friend, Dr. Bill O'Brien.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Isn't it?
Aw, yeah, from Beth. That is so, because doesn't that give you a leg up for October?
It gets us a little bit of a boost, gets us started on October.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I thought that, but no, here's our giggle.
Okay.
You know, there's Eric Trump and there's Tiffania and Trader Tot and Little Boron and of course Precious Princess I Wank a Daddy Trump Kushner, and Eric the Dim Sun is always out there trying to find some way to clear out a little space for himself in the sun. So today he showed up over on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, Darlene.
Where else? He
made a rather shocking revelation.
In the New York Times, and it talks, it's this, her name is Crest. She doesn't want to give her last name because she says that her colleagues at work, it wouldn't go well with them. She lives in Manhattan. She's in her 50s.
Trump voter.
That's right. She is, she's gay. She said her 401k went up with your dad, 19.6%. Gas prices better than they were under Obama. She goes on to say that Obamacare was $560 a month for her, and she had lost her job, so she was priced out. She talks about crime in the neighborhood. She talks about Bill de Blasio and how he's inept. That the Trump-Russia thing, the Clinton's fingerprints are all over it. She calls Joe Biden weak. Is this? But she doesn't want to use her last name. And there are a lot of people that might be voting for your dad that aren't admitting it. And
it was Brett Stevens, who's been a critic of your dad, who wrote the editorial.
So are you counting on this person, on the secret voter?
Ainsley, that person's there. I'm telling you, I see it every day. The LGBT community, they are incredible. And you should see how they've come out in full force for my father every single day. I'm part of that community, and we love the man. And thank you for protecting our neighborhoods, and thank you for protecting our...
Wait. Eric just outed himself.
Did he do that?
I'm part of that community. Let's hear that again. Let's hear that again, sports fans.
On this person, on the secret voter.
Hey, Ainsley, that person's there. I'm telling you, I see it every day. The LGBT community, they are incredible. And you should see how they've come out in full force for my father every single day. I'm part of that community, and we love.
I am not taking him out of context. Needless to say, Darlene, this was of great consternation to the LGBTQ community, and
God, I hope Matt's turned the program off. I do, and Steve, and all the other members of the Rainbow who are part of the Horn Family Community Congregation, because that's just the stuff that nightmares are made of. So, wait, no, of course not. Matt has not turned the radio off. No, that's all. That's just the subject line for Matt in San Francisco. No, we don't want him.
I can't believe you got you right then, on that.
And then you know, there was a full on conniption on Twitter. You know, he probably should have told his wife before announcing it on Fox.
Exactly. Couldn't happen to a nicer wife, though.
And then all caps, wait, what? I mean, I think I speak for all of us when I say no thanks, but I'm still in shock. Then there's, but we don't want him. Eric Trump coming out is not the birthday gift this homosexual wanted, said another commenter. Thank you for protecting our neighborhoods. Thank you for protecting our cities. Does he think LGBT is some kind of law enforcement agency? And then someone, tough break for the LGBT community. And then this, and this is the cowbell out of it all. Playing YMCA at every rally is really working.
I needed that. Thank you. That was great. Oh, God. Oh. Wow. I think in the interest of talking at high speed and like he knows something, he really outed himself. Yeah.
Just because the goddess of irony will not let things like this go. Headline, Michigan Republican fighting to block governor's public health orders, tests positive for COVID. looks like when I get back from being Bob Kincaid amateur Uber driver, I'm going to have to... sacrifice a rubber chicken tonight or two.
Yeah. That sounds like it. We're on the East Coast. Are we 8 o'clock for the debate or
no? We're nine. We're nine for the debate. Nine East Coast, 6 Pacific.
Okay. Well, that must be another thing. I saw 8 o'clock, so I wonder if there's some shit going around. To get people to. I don't know. I thought I saw 8 o'clock somewhere, but okay. So we're 9. So that's. It's starting from the East Coast. And,
okay. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. This from Shorty in L.A., just anticipating the summary effect of Eric Trump there. Shorty just wrote, Tracy, down, girl, down.
Where are you, Tracy? Come on, Tracy,
God.
Don't speak up. We miss you and love you.
Yes.
Hopefully she's listening. I know she's probably studying hard and, Yeah.
And Cynthia wrote in and said, Bob, you know I'm the T in LGBT, and I don't want him either. Hell, like they say, there's one in every crowd, and that one's batshit crazy.
Oh. Got it right, Cynthia. You go, girl. Yeah.
You can have him. Yep. I don't want him. He's too Trump for me. Yeah, exactly. Oh, God, I'm singing. I'm getting punchy here.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well,
One other thing, courtesy of Randy and PA, this might be your problem. Hardwoods are susceptible to the Asian spotted lanternfly. They're a real problem here in PA, and they love to kill maple trees.
It could be there. You know, I had a dead elm. I think I have one elm left on my property. I'm still trying to identify it. But we had, unfortunately, it was a dead elm. I had that removed. I had another dead maple. The arborist said, you remove these trees, the remaining maple will flourish. Died. So he could be right. So I got to look into that, but it's very concerning. But anyway, want to leave on a positive note. Happy note.
Here, here.
It's all good. This is a great show. That's a happy note. Thank you for entertaining me for as long as you did, Bob. Horn listeners unite. This is an important debate tonight, and you know, fingers crossed that
right. And when it's all over, just remember when it's all over, 4 ibuprofen, 16 ounces of ice cold water. Betty by. You'll be okay in the morning.
Thank you, my friend.
You have a great evening, darling. It's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. As always, it's a great conversation. Thanks to you, Bob.
All right.
Take care.
Later. Bye now. That's our buddy Darlene in Connecticut. And truly a formidable and joyful conversationalist to engage with. Thank you, Darlene. So that's the end of the program. Even got a couple of extra minutes in. Thanks, Jug of Punch. Thank you, Beth in Dallas. Thank you very kindly for jumping in. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little ongoing conversation. Thanks to all of you who, via your subscriptions or your a la carte contributions, keep this all going. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, Malloy's on his way at 9 o'clock. If you just can't stand the debate, well, stay here with headon.live, and at 9 o'clock you'll get you'll have the pleasure of listening to Mike Malloy instead. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Once again, COVID is on the rise. We never even got over the first wave. Please stay safe. Stay home if you can. Avoid going out to the extent humanly possible. If you have to be out, wear your mask. The presence of a mask is an IQ test now in America. Wear your mask, wear your gloves, wash your hands, carry some hand sanitizer with you at all times. Maintain your social distance. 10 feet, not 6. Remember what Paul from Parts Unknown said. And for God's sakes, if somebody with a mouth like a cat's ass comes towards you saying, "I'm part of the LGBT community," avoid them like the plague, because they are. Later.